Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Hey, it's the Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. With us this week, Blair Horner, Senior Policy Advisor for NYPIRG. That's the New York Public Interest Research Group. By full disclosure, he also does commentary for WAMC on the board, but we value his insights into New York State government and politics, and we welcome him back once again. Our old sparring partner, if you can call him that, Blair Horner. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks for having me, but sometimes I feel like I'm the punching bag, not a sparring partner.
Oh, you stop with that. Listen, no one's punching at you. We're kind of punching around the edges. We're trying to get you worked up so that you'll tell us the real things that are going on in New York State government and politics, starting with our financial situation, a mess right now in New York. A lot of this is anticipated. I mean, it's not like we didn't know what was coming from the federal government in terms of the cuts, many soon to be severe in terms of SNAP benefits, Medicaid, not to mention what's happening with the environment and how that impacts New York, and so much more. And Blair, I have to say, you're always on top of the issues. This week, you wrote about the fact that New York's finances are getting bleaker. But I don't know who to blame more. What's happening in Washington or the Democrats for humping and thumping and not working to try to help New Yorkers who may begin to be suffering?
Well, I think the blame should fall squarely on President Trump and the Republicans in the House and the Senate. I mean, they're the ones who approved a budget that savages services for Americans and enacted a incredible tax cut for the wealthy. So the shift of resources from poor to rich. In New York, yeah, I mean, everyone sort of knew what was going to happen, but the state's fiscal year starts on April 1st. The budget was done around May 1st. And the feds hadn't acted yet. In fact, they acted in July. So it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen. You never can tell. Things could implode. The budget that the state did included a measure that allowed the governor, if there was really deep cuts this fiscal year, to act unilaterally. But the impact on the current state budget is relatively minor. And it's really the cuts in the out years that Comptroller DiNapoli sort of flagged as a big problem.
Well, and let's get a little further into those cuts. So I was talking with the Assembly Minority Leader, that's Will Barclay, a Republican, and he was trying to tell me that no. The only people who are being cut from SNAP benefits were people who need to work now because they were getting benefits they don't deserve, or others who may be getting benefits they don't deserve. What is this argument all about here? Is that true?
Well, the proposals that were advanced, both in terms of food stamps, now known as SNAP, and Medicaid, a lot of them deal with having work requirements. But in addition to that, new bureaucratic obstacles. So, for example, you have to sign up, you have to prove that you have a job and everything else. Now you're talking about the most vulnerable people in society when it comes to something like health insurance, proving that they're meeting the requirements of the law. And so it's widely viewed, the Congressional Budget Office agrees, that as a result of those new procedures, about 10 to 12 million Americans are going to lose their health insurance. And so, I mean, you can make an argument, you can sort of spin that this is about making people work, but what it's about is throwing people off the Medicaid rolls and people not having health insurance. That's effectively what it is. And it depends on how you view health insurance. Do you view it as something that people should have as a right of being an American? Or do you view it as some sort of luxury that people have to fight for in order to get? We view it as more of a principle that should be that every American should have health insurance so that, you know, people don't decide whether or not they're going to get sick. They get sick and they should have health insurance to cover them. And what the Congress has done at the president's request is throw millions of Americans and probably around a million New Yorkers off the Medicaid rolls. And God knows what happens to them after that.
Yeah, and basically what I said to Barclay was, is New York getting less money or not? He said, well, you're going to get less money. So the bottom line is less money for New York. Like you said, because of the rules and the regulations, what's going to happen with people who can't meet them? There was a great deep dive, I believe it was on John Oliver's show, about the amount of paperwork that people have to do to secure some of these benefits. While the Republicans want small businesses and others that they like to get rid of all the paperwork that has to be done, make it simpler so it's, we're not caught in red tape, the exact opposite is happening with people who have the least.
Yeah, and people who are vulnerable. I mean, these are people who are on the lower income scale in America, and there are people who are struggling just to survive. And to add to their misery, additional bureaucratic obstacles in order to get something as basic as health insurance or food is, I think, cruel. And as a result, people will get sick. People will get sicker than they should. People will die earlier than they should because of the policies enacted. And it's not because, again, the theory behind this, what the Congress did, is not because the nation's debt is grown so dramatically that it's out of control, which, by the way, it has. They made it worse by advancing tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. And those individuals, the wealthiest Americans, don't need any help. They should pay higher taxes. After World War II, which is the last time we had debt at roughly the levels we have it now, they enacted tax rates that were double, if not triple, what they are now in order to pay off the debt. And the Republican strategy would make some sense if they were trying to do that, but they're not. They're in fact, they advanced the budget that makes the nation's debt worse, dramatically worse.
With that said, going forward, what can New York Governor Kathy Hochul and the legislature do in the coming session? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for any state for that matter, but certainly New York. I mean, if you care about the poor and the working low-income individuals that won't have health insurance, the state's going to have to try to figure out ways to redesign their programs and to, if necessary, come up with revenues to provide that safety net for those people that need it. And so there are different things that the state should do. One of them is to review their economic development and tax benefit programs and see if those work, if they work. And then if they don't, then you should get rid of them and use the additional revenues for these kinds of programs. And if they're not, if they are working, but they're really not benefiting society more than taking care of people that need that are needy, then you should close them down and use those revenues too. The state spends billions of dollars on economic development and tax incentive programs. I think that there should be a careful review of all of them, particularly the ones that benefit the oil companies, which are not really doing anything other than making money hand over fist and ruining the climate. Why not close the benefits, the tax benefits that exist in state law, generate money for the state? So that's one of the ways you could look at it. Another big way to look at it would be if the wealthy are getting big tax cuts as a result of the federal proposal, why not claw back some of the benefits to those individuals and reprogram it for state programs? It's going to be hard. The state is going to be facing big deficits, and it's going to be hard to deal with them. They're not going to get smaller over time unless the Congress reverses itself. And so the state is going to basically have to figure it out on its own. But looking at wasteful tax expenditures or economic development programs and seeing if you can re-engineer the state's personal income tax code to get some of the benefits that the Congress just gave the wealthy, those seem like two obvious places to get started.
Yeah, I'm confused electorally as well when it comes to citizens and voting. Let's just say, the New York Republicans are supporting the Trump administration and its policies and parroting them here in New York. But, they have to get reelected. And the question is, for example, I'm reading a report right now from Tom DiNapoli saying that even as state funding for senior services has increased, thousands remain on wait lists for in-home care, meals, and other essential support. And data reporting by the New York State Office of Aging makes it difficult to know who is being left behind or where. Seniors in trouble, You know, folks who are on all levels of the income scale could be Republican. Are they thinking about the people they're hurting and how they're going to vote next time?
Well, the package that was advanced was really pushed by the president. And the key component of it was to enact these tax cuts, primarily for the well-to-do. And part of the way that they wanted to sort of deal with how do you pay for at least some of that was to go after these programs that benefited needy Americans. And so it's not going to be that popular, that's for sure. But you generally, the people that are going to the most likely to vote are the people that, you know, as you go up the income scale, you're much more likely to vote. And so I think to some extent, you heard it when you talked to the Assembly Minority Leader, they're going to, you know, they're going to push their talking points hard and try to say things like, if you want benefits, go get a job. Now, if you are low income or disabled or sick, that's hard to do. And it's certainly not easier to do if you're sick and you don't have health insurance.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the environment. And we've seen what's been happening with the EPA, Lee Zeldin, the former New York congressman, gubernatorial candidate, who's virtually removed regulations. The latest thing they're on is getting rid of the carbon rule for automobiles and removing those regulations. And you prop that up against New York and our Climate Act and other legislation, including the fact that so many experts now say we're so far away and won't make our climate goals. We've got a real problem when it comes to the environment and regulation.
Well, it's really, in many ways, sort of the cuts to the needy are horrible and will cause misery for all of those people. But when you destroy the climate, there's really no one benefits from that. And the impacts will be felt, are being felt now, but are going to be really terrible in decades to come. And so our children and our grandchildren are going to suffer dramatically because of decisions that were made over the past 20 years. And the Trump administration and the Congress simply don't believe in science. And so because they don't believe in science, they think they can just get rid of all of the alternative energy power sources that were under development and keep relying on fossil fuels, which are the primary cause for the warming planet. And so their decisions will go down in history, assuming there is a history, will go down in history as one of the worst things that have been decided in human history, because they are accelerating the climate catastrophe that we're all going to endure for years to come. There's really no defense for it. And it is purely ideology combined with campaign contributions trumping the public's best interest. And it really means they ignore science when they do it.
Yeah, and they do it by saying that it's going to be a savings for consumers. How short-term and wrong. Now, if you have a hybrid or a hybrid plug-in or one of these cars that the car companies have embraced at this point, why would you want to turn around from that? Because consumers actually save more. I haven't put a dime worth of gas in my new plug-in yet because of the technological advances and the ability to both help with climate warming and save a few dollars in your pocket at the same time.
And it plays out even with people's homes. If you invest in solar panels and weatherization in people's homes, they save money on their energy bill. I mean, it is purely talking points propaganda. When you think of the costs in the aggregate, it's not just about your utility rates. It's going to be $52 billion to protect New York City Harbor. It's going to be $75 to $100 billion to protect Long Island. It's another $55 billion to deal with upstate New York's resiliency costs due to the climate catastrophe we're all living through. It's $100 billion to make the New York City sewer system able to handle the more intense storms. The costs are astronomical.
And it's pay me now or pay me later. It'll be more expensive later.
That's right. The longer you wait, the worse it gets. The worse it gets, the more costly it is financially, and of course, when it comes to our health as well.
Well, another uplifting subject. Thanks for that, Blair. Now, let's
You're
go
welcome.
your favorite topic and mine when it comes to political corruption. And you write, it's back. redistricting returns. We know what's going on in Texas, what they want to do with the five congressional seats and an off-calendar redistricting move. We see what the governor of California wants to do. But in New York, it's much tougher. Governor Kathy Hochul said she really can't do anything. And I don't know how you're going to change the Constitution with an amendment. What is going on in your mind with this whole redistricting process? Some Democrats say, yeah, get them back for what they're doing. This is unprecedented. But it all seems like a swirling down the great toilet bowl.
Well, you know, this really is, for listeners, a sort of depressing conversation, because what's happening is the president understands that his policy decisions, particularly in this year's federal budget discussions and reconciliation, are extremely unpopular. And so what he's trying to do is rig the 2026 election by getting red states to not to change their political boundaries to benefit Republicans going into the 2026 election cycle. And generally speaking, places like Texas or Missouri or Indiana have more have easier ways of changing their political boundaries than states like California or New York. And so it is purely about rigging the election to help the Republicans keep the House of Representatives. And it's not about anything else. It's not about there's changes in population. It's not that they discovered that there's more people living in the country than they thought in the census. None of that stuff. It's purely about rigging the election. And so Democrats, of course, they want to do the same thing as a way to get more seats for Democrats. And Governor Hochul has even said this is a political decision. Well, it's not. It's about where people live, and in a representative democracy, how do you create political boundaries that make legislative boundaries that make sense for a legislature, for a Congress, for local government. It's supposed to be about what's best for the public interest. And when you have this partisan race to the bottom, as you described, and I completely agree, all you're doing is undermining your own democracy. Now, I understand why Democrats want to do it. I understand why Republicans want to do it. But just because they want to do it doesn't mean it's right. And the most important thing should be, what can we do to make legislative boundaries at the federal, state, and local level reflect the communities that are in those areas? That's the goal. And then you let the chips fall where they may. In New York, there's nothing that the governor or the legislature can do that will impact the 2026 election, because we have a constitution that restricts that. So if they want to talk about fixing the state's redistricting system, I'm always for that. But let's do it thoughtfully and right, and look out for what's best for the public, not the political parties.
Boy, do we agree on that. Now the question is, when they have so-called independent redistricting commissions, how independent are they, Blair? Someone's got to pick the members.
Yeah, I mean, in New York, we don't have an independent redistricting commission. They call it that, but it's not. It's just bipartisan. It's the two major parties deciding what the political boundaries are going to be. And if they can't agree, then the courts draw the lines. And that's what's happened. It's been a mess. California does have an independent redistricting commission, and it's a complicated process for how they do it. Effectively, what they have in California is a lottery system where people apply to be on the commission, and then they're just chosen randomly. The appointees do not know who the people, they just pick the names out of a hat, basically. And that minimizes the fact that you're trying to rig it to benefit your own political party. In New York, the appointees are all picked by the political elite of the state, and it's effectively the two major parties deciding what they want to do. By the way, there's more people that are blanks, people that are not in any political party, than there are Republicans, and they have no say under the New York state system. So the New York state system needs to be fixed. We're all for that, but let's fix the system, not make it worse.
Now, I mean this seriously. What about AI? Couldn't AI analyze the roles and come up with an independent way to hash out a commission?
Yeah, someone has to write the program. And so you still end up with what is the fair way to do it. And in California and Arizona have systems where, you know, you're using a lottery system to choose the members. It's much harder to rig that system than it is in other states. And the red states, it's just basically up to the legislature and the governor to draw the lines. And there, because they have super majorities in those states, like Texas, for example, they can just do whatever they want. Now, that's a terrible system. The president knows that, though, and that's why he's trying to squeeze more Republican seats out of Texas, because he knows his unpopular policies are going to cost Republican seats in the 2026 election. So he's trying to rig the lines so that not only does he minimize the losses, but in fact may even increase the majority for Republicans in the House. That's not the reason, the rationale for how you draw lines, you know, rigging it to benefit yourself. Although it happens, both parties do it, don't get me wrong, but that's not a good rationale. The good rationale should be what makes sense for the communities and the people that live in a representative democracy. How do you make the representation reflect the interests and hopes of the people that live in the community, not how do you game it for the political party who happens to be in the majority?
We're speaking with Blair Horner, Senior Policy Advisor for NYPERG, and you are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Giustina. Blair, Governor Kathy Hochul was all about her affordability agenda this session. She continues to tout it as she travels the state. And now there's a question about these rebate checks are coming, some on her Democratic side even criticizing for that with the cuts that are coming everywhere and the need to help people. Should rebate checks be going out to New Yorkers, or is it just a blatant political move?
Well, it's been approved in the budget, so it is the law. And if people want to change it, they have to change the law to do that. The governor advanced it as part of her budget. The legislature agreed to it as part of the final budget, and it's the law. So if people want to change it, they got to deal with that. And, you know, I don't see that happening. So as a practical matter, the rebate checks will go out the door. Now, you could argue, given the state's looming financial difficulties, both currently, it's there, but it's not as great, and then growing over time, is this a wise decision? But there's lots of things that are in that category. And her argument is that the state was able to generate more revenues than they expected, and this is a way to give people back the money that had been collected that was not spent. So again, the public ultimately, this will be a voter's decision ultimately. Was this a wise decision or was this an unwise decision? Because it's going to happen unless the legislature comes back and decides to change it.
Yeah, you know, so many people in New York that I talk to mention that they feel like they have a hole in their pocket. You know, as soon as they get some money to put in the pocket, it falls out the hole and goes somewhere else. To that end, this week, another National Grid Central Hudson Gas and Electric rate hike gets approved. And it gets approved immediately. And it's going to go into effect. How can people continue to pay, especially seniors and low-income folks, their energy bills when these approvals, they just keep hiking the rates?
Well, that's a very good question. And what's lacking in New York that you find in most other states is an entity that is both empowered to advocate on behalf of utility ratepayers in the regulatory process and has the resources and independence to do it right. I mean, New York has a small office. There used to be something called the Consumer Protection Board years ago. And when Governor Pataki closed it down, they created a little office within the Department of State to look out for utility ratepayers. But it doesn't have the same juice that you find in most of the rest of the country in terms of that type of office. A bill's passed both houses, actually, that will be going to the governor that would create that entity. And, you know, the Public Service Commission is supposed to look out for the interests of ratepayers, but they're also supposed to look out for the interests of the utilities themselves. And when you get into these complicated rate proceedings, you need to ensure that the consumer perspective is adequately represented. And we think that if that bill that has passed both houses becomes law, that will help put a check on these rate hikes. Now, some of it, of course, is things that you don't have any control over. Climate's getting worse. The costs of moving, you know, power from one part of the country to another is more difficult. We have this sort of deregulated system. And so I think that there's a legitimate argument to look at that from soup to nuts to see if the system actually works. But one of the short-term things that the governor could do in terms of affordability agenda would be to empower the consumer voice when it comes to these ratepayer decisions.
Finally, Blair, you got less than a minute. Congestion pricing, Are the Republicans going to ultimately kill this, or will cooler heads prevail?
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. As it's been implemented, the griping has dropped dramatically. And that's what happened, by the way, in other cities around the world when they created congestion pricing. There's a lot of griping at first, and then it happens. So, I'm an optimist despite everything we've talked about today. I think it'll hang in there. They need the revenue to make the mass transit system of New York City and the greater metropolitan area work. And if you don't have a mass transit system that works, the city doesn't work. So hopefully cooler heads will prevail.
Well, I love your cooler head, Blair, for coming on and talking about the issues that really matter to New Yorkers and doing it in a bipartisan way. Blair Horner, he is the senior policy advisor for NYPIRG. You can find out more at NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org. Blair, thanks so much for joining us on the Capital Connection.
Thanks for having me, David.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.